Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma, and I'm so glad to have you along for today's episode. We have Terry Wangard joining us here to talk about her new World War II novel, Seashells in My Pocket. Before we get to her interview, though, I'd just like to welcome all of you who may be new to the show. So glad to have you along with us. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to Christian Historical Fiction Talk on your favorite podcasting platform so that you don't miss out on any of the great guests that we have coming up for you. And I have a fun topic coming up in a few weeks as well that you're going to want to stay tuned for. Also, follow Christian Historical Fiction Talk on Facebook, X, Instagram, and Pinterest, because we're in all of those places, and it's another great way to keep up with us and to sometimes even get input on the show. So you don't want to miss out on that. For all my returning listeners, I'm so glad to have you back. Welcome back. Always good to have you here. Please go to liztolsma.com. Check out my Patreon if you haven't done so yet. I would really appreciate any support that you can give the show. I am so grateful for each and every one of you. You are helping to keep this going and making it possible for me to keep continuing with this podcast. Okay, I am so pleased to have Terry Wangard with us today. As I said earlier, she is someone I have known for a while, and we attend the same writers group in the area, so I know her. I've watched her on her publication journey, and it's so great to see her to get to the point where she's at. And this new book is absolutely fantastic, so unique, but I'm not going to take up any more time telling you about it. Please help me welcome Terry Wangard to the show today, here to talk about her new book, Seashells in My Pocket. Welcome to the show, Terry. It's so good to have you with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
I can't believe that this is the first time that I've had you on, because we've known each other for a good number of years now, and you've had quite a few books come out in that time, and so I'm glad that we get to rectify that today and have you visit us. Mm-hmm. So before we start talking about your new book, which is Seashells in My Pocket, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
I live in Wisconsin. Actually, I'm probably the closest author to you, Liz.
I think you are, yeah.
I've been writing since, the early 2000s I started, but then I put it aside for a while. And then in 2008, I read Debbie Macomber's book, 20 Wishes, about a group of women who fulfill their bucket list. And I thought, I was going to start writing again. So I got a laptop and started writing, and was published in 2016. And that was my first World War II book, inspired by family history, and that was going to be my only World War II book. I was starting to do a contemporary story when an editor told me if I wanted to get a contract, I would probably need a series. So I started writing more World War II, and I'm still doing it.
We're glad you are, because we love World War II. Now, you have an interesting day job as well. Do you mind sharing with us what your day job is?
In 1984, my dad started publishing Classic Voting magazine. And my mom worked with him, and my brother, and I did too, but I did have a library job at the time, and so I was helping mostly in the evening. And then a couple of years later, they were getting busy enough, the magazine was growing, and I didn't appreciate commuting. We were living in Southern California at the time. So I left my job and joined the family firm full time.
And the magazine is still being published, as I
believe, right? Most of our subscribers are older, and a lot of them are dying off, but we're still going.
So you've learned a lot about classic boats in the years that you've been working on it then, haven't you?
Yes, I've been on a lot, and it's interesting. We've been to a lot of places like Lake Tahoe, which is a beautiful lake. And you get to just soar across the lake on one of these boats, and it's great.
Oh, that sounds so awesome. Friends of ours have a classic boat from the 1970s, I believe. And every time we go out with them in it, somebody has to comment what a beautiful boat it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as I mentioned, your new book is Seashells in My Pocket, which is a very interesting title. And the whole premise of the book is very intriguing. So tell us about Seashells in My Pocket.
It takes place in Brazil. My original idea was to do a series on war brides from unusual places. In other words, not England or France. And I knew about Brazil because during the Berlin airlift, Lieutenant Gail Halvorsen was known as the candy bomber. He tossed candy down to the children watching the planes come into Berlin. And he, during the war, was a cargo pilot flying out of Natal, Brazil. Nothing in his biography really touches on what happened in Brazil, so I did a little digging, and it's really quite an interesting place. It was like the busiest airport, one of the busiest airports in the world at the time. Hmm. And they have a large number of German communities in Brazil. Many came after the failed revolutions in 1848, and more came after World War I. So that set up all kinds of possibilities for a story. I did use a German-Brazilian woman who is fascinated with the United States, in particular Cypress Gardens, and she gets a job on the airbase because of her mathematical ability. She works with weights and balances and loading the cargo. And of course, she meets one of the pilots. Daniel Lambert was actually introduced in my World War I book, The Storm Breaks Forth. He was the baby nephew of the main character there. So this gave me an opportunity to bring him back and then just have a little fun with Brazil, because that's one of the few countries that I've written about that I've actually visited.
Oh, that is just so fascinating. So you said you've visited Brazil. Tell us what Brazil is like and what was it like during the war?
I was only there for one day. I was on a South American cruise from Chile to Brazil. And before we went to the airport, we did go to Sugarloaf and the Cristo Redeemer statue. We saw Copacabana Beach. I remember we had some ice cream somewhere. It was coconut, which I don't normally like, but that was okay. So it was interesting, but it was only that one day. Mm-hmm. During the war, they had a dictator who wanted to be on the good side of the United States. They did align with the Allies, and they did send an army to Italy, I believe. The airbase there was turned over to Brazil after the war. So there's really not much American involvement visible anymore in Brazil from the war years.
So I wonder why the U.S. decided to establish an airbase in Brazil. That seems kind of strange because it's not really anywhere near Europe or the Pacific either.
Well, Natal is on the bulge into the Atlantic. It's the closest point to Africa between the Western Hemisphere and the Eastern Hemisphere. So it was a big route for flying supplies, avoiding ocean travel where the U-boats would likely sink a lot of ships. So it was an important cargo route, and even planes. They would have squadrons of planes heading to Europe, particularly Africa or Italy, and they would take the southern route going to Brazil and then across to Ascension Island and then Africa.
Oh, that's really interesting. Now that you say it, it makes sense. I just didn't have that map in my mind when I was thinking about it, but that makes total sense. Oh, that's super, super interesting. Now, the hero in this book is a pilot, and I know you've done some other books with pilots in them. How did you learn about what flying was like during the Second World War?
My first series was entirely on B-17s, so no problem. I just read everything I could about that. Now, in this series, each book will have a different aircraft. This one has the C-47, which is like the DC-3. And I've been to air shows, like in Oshkosh or Janesville around here, that had them. And so I was able to get inside and see how they're laid out. And like when they're parked, they have a very steep slope. Yeah. You board at the tail and you go upstairs to the cockpit. I never flew in one like I did with the B-17, but I did read as much as I could. It's just not as much as with the Flying Fortress, of course, but I did get a hold of pilots' handbooks and other materials that, while I'm not an expert in them, I know a whole lot more than I used to.
Right. And it really does help to have the EAA show here in Oshkosh. Like you said, I've been there and they do have a lot of World War II era aircraft there. So that's great for research.
Yes.
Makes it so much easier. Now, like you said, you wrote that World War II series, and then you had a World War I with the sinking of the Lusitania. Mm-hmm. And now you're back to World War II. What is it that you like about writing this time period? Why did you come back to it?
Because I had the idea. I wanted to do something different. Most World War II books are set in Europe. France, England, some of the southern or eastern countries, but pretty much all in Europe. And I just like doing different things. So Brazil, because I knew about the Gail Halvorsen story, it just appealed to me. And so I got the idea for these series stories and I went for it.
And we love interesting and unique. There are so many World War II stories that have been told and have yet to be told. But I think I can honestly say I have never heard anything about Brazil during the Second World War. So that's definitely unique and something that I, as a reader and consumer of World War II fiction, absolutely love. So thank you for digging up these little known facts and telling stories about them. We love that.
Good.
Now, war stories can be very dark and heavy. I mean, it is war after all. And yet you managed to bring a little bit of light and humor into this book. How did you go about doing that?
I like reading books that have a lot of humor in it, so I'm going to write them that way too. With this one, well, it starts out, Daniel's flying in from Ascension Island, and they fly through a flock of flamingos. Well, you might know I am quite familiar with the story of the Miracle on the Hudson. So, yeah, I went for that, and it's different. I mean, who ever heard of a flamingo crashing into a plane?
Right.
And then I just look for opportunities where it can be funny. Because it's in Brazil, you know, they don't have the Gestapo breathing down their neck, where life is a whole lot more serious when you've got that or bombing raids daily or whatever. So I feel like it's more possible or not as offensive, maybe, to have funny moments. And with this, there's not a whole lot of language difference. And it's not Isabel's native language, but she's quite fluent in English. And so there's not a lot of misunderstandings there. But whenever there was an opportunity, I kind of sneaked it in. So it's just what I like to read that I write.
Yeah, I love that there can be World War II that is dealing with the hardships of the war. You have a little bit of intrigue, you have a villain as well, and yet you have these lighthearted moments, like you said, with your heroine not quite understanding all of these American idioms or anything like that and being quite puzzled by them really breaks it up a little bit and makes you smile. Yes.
Yeah.
There are also several twists in the book. Are you a planner? Did you plan those all out, or are you a pantser and did those just sort of come to you as you wrote the book?
When I start, I usually have a list of things I want to include. Like I read about the weather phenomenon that's over the Atlantic, where it can get quite rough. And so I decided right then there was going to be an incident where Daniel's plane goes up and down and practically upside down. I knew I wanted to include that. And all these other little incidents. I'd read something about someone else's experience, and so I thought of an adaption for that. So I have a list of all these different things to include, but I don't necessarily put them in the order I thought I would. It's just, I guess I have a list of things plotted, but I write more as a panster. And then I just refer to the list to see, well, what can we do now? But yeah, I'm kind of in between. I don't outline. I just can't do that. It doesn't work for me. But I do make a list of what I want to include.
And it works brilliantly. So now I did a little digging and read your bio. And when you were in the Girl Scouts, the first badge you earned was for writing. Mm-hmm. What did you write that earned you that badge?
I had a notebook that I scribbled stories in. And I'm sorry to say that notebook is long gone. I would be interested in reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was in the Girl Scouts, I really wanted to collect badges. And so that one looked like that would be easy for me. And yeah, I went after it. I remember at a slumber party, I was telling stories there. I think there were ghost stories, actually. So I did have a bit of a storytelling talent when I was young, but I didn't think then about writing as a career at all.
Well, we're glad that you changed from being a librarian, although that's a fun job too, to be surrounded by books all day long.
It is.
And you also grew up in Green Bay. Now, I don't know how much like our California or North Carolina listeners are going to understand this, but if you grow up in Green Bay, that automatically, if you live in Wisconsin, you think Green Bay Packers. So yes. Does that mean you're a Packers fan?
I wasn't when I was growing up. We would have these beautiful Sunday afternoons, and no one would want to come out and play. They were inside watching the Packer game. It wasn't until we moved away. Actually, we were in Michigan. And then I would listen to games on the radio. So that was really when I started being a Packer fan. I've never actually been to a game. My parents did, and my sister, but not me. So,
that's something you're going to have to rectify for sure.
Well, my dad and sister went on a friend's tickets. It was winter, and they were at the very top of the stadium, which, of course, is not covered. No. And it was a windy, cold day, and I don't think they enjoyed it one little bit.
And when my husband and I went, it was September, and we sat in the sun, and it was broiling hot. I do remember that about it. So, yeah, there are a few short Sundays where it's beautiful to go watch a game there, but not a whole ton of them. Now, you mentioned that this is going to be a series, I believe. So can you tell us what's coming up next?
Iceland. Iceland was well used as a place for anti-submarine activities. They had Navy planes there, the amphibious PBYs flying out of there to watch over convoys and to watch for submarines. And so that is the next setting. It's actually finished. And all three books feature three friends who grew up in Milwaukee, and they all become pilots of very different aircraft. Daniel was a cargo pilot in Brazil. Now, Stefan is the PBY pilot in Iceland, and he meets a French-Canadian woman who is actually with the American Red Cross as a recreational worker. And I wanted to have like the foreign war bride, but it would not be practical to have an Icelander woman, because the Icelanders did not appreciate having first the Brits and then the Americas invade them during the war. In fact, the British came in firing their guns, you know, to take over the place because they didn't want Germany taking Iceland. So there was not a lot of friendship between the Icelanders and the Allies. So I needed someone else to be the heroine. And I decided to go with a French-Canadian woman. And I got her there through the Red Cross. I didn't want to do a Red Cross story again because I did that in Soar Like Eagles. But that was more of a Club Mobiles and the Donut Girls story. So this is a recreational worker who were sent to Iceland to keep up the morale of the men, because there was really nothing for them to do in Iceland while they were there.
Oh, that sounds super interesting. So do you have a title or a release date for that yet?
It's No Leaves in Autumn, and it's coming out next March. And okay. The third book is Listen for the Chickadees, and that comes out in March of 26.
Fantastic. I love those titles. Those are really beautiful titles and very intriguing. They make me just want to pick up the book just on the title alone, let alone the settings and the uniqueness of these stories. Very interesting. So if the listeners would like to connect with you, keep up with you, so they can learn more about Seashells in My Pocket or about the other books when they release, how can they go about doing that?
My website, which is terrywangard.com. I also have a Facebook author page. I'm on Instagram, although I'm not there that frequently. And I have a newsletter which can be signed up for at my website.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. Well, Terry, it has been so lovely getting a chance to chat with you. We talk sometimes during the meetings that we go to, the writer meetings, but we don't really get to sit down in depth like this and talk about your writing. So it's been a lot of fun to learn more about it and learn more about you. We really appreciate it. And we will definitely have to have you back next March when the next book releases.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was a wonderful chat that we had with Terry. She is a gracious lady and a wonderful writer. So please be sure to check out Seashells in My Pocket. The show notes are all over on liztolzman.com. There you can find out more about the book, more about Terry. There's a handy link to Seashells in My Pocket, and I'll also have a link to Terry's website there. So be sure to go over there and check all of that out. Next week, I am so pleased to have the very talented Janier Tromp with us. She is a returning guest, and she's here to talk about her new book, Darkness Calls the Tiger, which just is a really neat, intriguing title, and we'd speak about the title in the interview. So you're going to want to be sure to be here for my talk with her next week. Thank you so much for all of your loyal support to the podcast. I couldn't do it without you. I say that all the time, but I say it because it really is true. And I'm so glad to have you all along and to provide content that you find to be very helpful to you. I hope that you all have a great week, and we will see you next time.